Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
All right, welcome back to another episode on Friends from Work Plus here in the Mary Marvel Watching Society.
Yes.
We are finally one more stop in. Well, and I guess at the end of this episode, we'll be at our last stop on our Daredevil watch through. So bit of a break there between episodes one and two. Who would have thought? That's never happened.
That's how we like to do it. Promise an episode and then wait 2 months to deliver it, for sure.
Right, yep. But you know what? I feel like the timing is going to wind up working out pretty perfectly.
Yep. You know why? Because there was a shot of Daredevil in the Echo trailer. Yep. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, wearing the red suit.
Yes, yep.
Which you know I love.
Two things about the Echo trailer really quick. I guess I didn't realize how involved Kingpin was going to be. Like, he's the whole first, 30 seconds of the trailer, and he's narrating the whole thing. And then to get a shot of Matt as well. Wow. It looks like, because of the TV mature stuff too, it's going to be a perfect setup for what we're talking about here. The new Daredevil season and then Daredevil from Netflix. Just a lot of good synergy right now.
I know. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether Daredevil would release under this new banner, the Marvel Spotlight, that seems to maybe allow for a wider range of content.
Yep. Today we're talking about Daredevil from Netflix, season 3, our favorite season of Netflix television, episodes 5 through 9 today, I believe.
Yes.
If you missed our 1 through 4 episodes coverage and or our other Daredevil seasons coverage, or you're just new to Friends from Work Plus, you can find that back in the feed somewhere, I'm sure.
Yes. As a kind of reminder, in those first 4 episodes, we saw Matt come back from this bone-shattering injury where I guess a building basically fell on top of him. It's not really discussed much here. I can't imagine why. But we have seen a lot of Matt kind of coming back and getting his like hearing back in shape, getting just generally back in shape. And he's been living at the church. And kind of while that's going on, we've also seen Wilson Fisk bringing himself back from prison and into the scene by kind of conning the FBI. I think where we left at the end of episode 4 was it was very clear that Fisk was starting to like get his hooks into people. And we, because we know who he is, knew something was coming that they didn't see or didn't understand. And I think as we're kind of looking against that backdrop with Matt getting back to kind of full strength, but still being emotionally wrecked by what happened, and Fisk like getting really set up to ascend again, I think this whole chunk of episodes that we're about to talk about is really like both of those things hitting at full speed and us kind of like seeing where we thought those paths were heading. And then they're like, again, that the show keeps the kind of dueling protagonists almost of Matt and Fisk. And so a lot happened in these episodes. And so we'll kind of talk here and there about each of the like the actual episodes and some of the incidents there, but I'm already thinking that there are things I'm going to forget to discuss because this is I guess I should just say this is the opposite of Daredevil season 1 for me, in that I have yet to encounter any episode that feels filler or meandering. Like every episode of this show feels perfectly paced, but also like packed full of like story movement.
Totally agree. My big takeaway too from this chunk is just how hopeless a show can make you feel by the end of episode 9 here. This is the darkest night before the dawn for sure. Season 3.
And then what? Episode 10, I think.
it gets worse. Okay, well, it's like 11:30 if episode 10 is midnight.
There you go. There you go.
Okay. No, this season of television is just so perfectly crafted. It's so perfectly paced. Like we talked about in the last chunk of episodes, to have Matt start at the absolute bottom and then somehow find a way to go even lower with his emotions and taking that out on his friends and trying to protect them and kind of becoming a darker Matt. And meanwhile, an escalation of Fisk rising to power and beating Matt without ever actually beating him, if that makes sense.
Right.
And these episodes specifically just continue that and actually escalate it to see the fingerprints that Fisk has everywhere. I just think it's such a perfect picture of how he could slowly, perfectly paced, manipulate the FBI and have his reach just slowly grow and grow and grow.
Right.
And again, that's why I think this chunk of episodes does such a good job of sending Matt and Fisk on kind of different trajectories. And then you throw in the Poindexter stuff too. And that gets wild.
Well, and I'm glad you said that because that's kind of where I want to, that's where I wanted to start. Looking back through these episodes, the first one that we watched in this set was The Perfect Game, which is the one where you really start to get insight into Dex's past and you kind of see it through the eyes of Fisk as he's reading his case file. And you learn that this person's a legitimate psychopath. His struggles to deal with that, which kind of allow, to me, actually make Dex kind of like a strangely empathetic character, which I think is really impressive because it's like you start to get to know this person who is for sure a psycho killer, but also knows that about himself and would like not to be. But it's like just the systems that he's had in place collapse and you kind of see that. And then it's the greater tragedy of Fisk. I just kind of looking at Bullseye's whole development here, if you want to think of him as Bullseye, like from us learning about him growing up and his therapist and his relationship with Julie, I think is her name, the girl that he's like kind of semi-stalking. Like
not semi.
Yes. Yeah. from that to the end of this, where he's now kind of fully suited up as Daredevil. He's the only one wearing the Daredevil costume and he's killing people. And we last saw him basically standing next to Fisk as his right hand guy slash enforcer. And it's like he's the one that's now kind of in charge of the FBI in some very real ways. Like,
yep.
And this is all stuff we can kind of talk about in the context of different characters. But I say all that to say, I think that Bullseye is one of the kind of slept on aspects of this show, of this season.
Ooh.
Like, I think when we look back on it, we always talk about just the great like Murdoch Fisk stuff. And obviously that's the heart of the whole show. But like, Bullseye is the famous Daredevil villain outside of Kingpin. And I think that this was a really effective way of adapting kind of a character that we saw can be really poorly adapted in the Daredevil film with Colin Farrell. No disrespect to Colin Farrell, who I think is incredible. But I just want to talk for a second about like your thoughts on his performance here, the way the character's written, the progression. Like, am I crazy in that I'm like really buying it? Or do you agree?
No, I'm laughing to myself because you're not crazy, but the way he plays the character creeps me out so much that I don't enjoy it. But I think that's, I guess, props to him. like,
right.
I am so unsettled about him, but I guess that means he's doing a good job. It's believable in that I love the Fisk manipulation side of it.
That pulls from a really great dynamic in the comics too, you know, where there, I think we talked about maybe last episode, but like Bullseye having this weird need for Fisk's validation and wanting to be like hired as his right-hand guy. And obviously that's a much more like comic booky version of that, which is why I feel like it's really impressive here for it to not be that just like, oh, he wants to, you know, be a big deal and work with Kingpin, but it's like, yeah, that is Fisk's strength, is knowing people's weaknesses and being able to kind of exploit those. And so,
and he's able to weather the storm of Poindexter screaming awful things at him and stealing his food from him. It's like the progression of how Dex goes from treating Fisk at the beginning of this series to where we kind of get to in the middle of this is wild. But again, believable and perfectly paced in how Fisk goes about it. Like, never too pushy.
right. Well, in talking about perfectly paced, isn't it crazy how well, like, if you step back and look at those early episodes and like the food scene, like you're talking about, like those little actions of like taking a bite out of the burger and then putting it back on the plate and it just looking like gross and messy. It's this little act of like, of immature cruelty.
Yeah.
That in the moment, you're almost like, yeah, like, I mean, that's gross, but also, you know, screw him. He's Kingpin and he's terrible, because you're kind of at the time still sort of on Dex's team, even though you're already getting some creepy vibes. But then it's like the further it goes, it's like, oh, man, yeah, like this guy is just.
Yep. And you almost for sadistic. A tiny second feel bad for Fisk for a second.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but then it just messes with your entire thought process and emotions, because you're right away like, wait a second. You can't feel bad for Fisk. He's in like a penthouse now and should be in jail.
Right.
But then you're also like, but you can't really root for Dex because he's a psycho and he's doing this stuff.
But then,
that's like, what I mean by like the whole thing just makes me feel icky inside kind of while I'm watching
it. No, I mean, it reminds me so much of the Frank Miller era of comics, which is what everybody always kind of compares every Daredevil thing to. But I think that more in some ways than even season one, I just think that it's trying to dig into like the complications of everyone's character. Like it's trying to take it to that next level. I don't think season one really had that many characters living in like a gray area, you know, like, arguably Stick, but I don't, you know, that's one of the more forgettable Stick. Parts of that season anyway.
I forgot about Stick, yeah.
Right. So it's like, but when you look at like Matt and Fisk, it's like, other than kind of like Fisk's relationship with Vanessa, it's pretty clear. Like,
Vanessa!
Like, you're not, I don't feel like you're as much dealing with like a ton of complicated, multifaceted characters. Like, you have that mostly just in Fisk and Matt. And I think even there, you probably get more of it with Fisk than you do with Matt. Like, I think that you see more of like Fisk, you're informed about his background and his story and all the like the White Rabbit and a Snowstorm stuff. But Matt, again, is pretty much kind of straightforward. And I guess my point being here, everyone kind of has that hook a little bit. Like Nadim, have been so frustrated with some of the decisions he's made, but also like, man, just one of the most empathetic, compelling characters that like is just out of nowhere. Like that's not like an adapted, or at least like a clearly adapted character from the comics. Like that's just this thing that they introduced into season three that's excellent.
Right. Well, and I love that you get to see how Fisk can get to all of them and the different ways he can do that.
Right.
Like in this episode alone, just in the fifth episode, it's pretty cool to see Fisk is crafting a plan to take down Matt Murdock before he even knows that is Daredevil. in having the FBI go after him. And then also seeing how he's planting the seeds with Dex, like we talked about. And then we're seeing, okay, can he take a different approach with someone like Nadim or the rest of the FBI? It's like you get to see that he's not just a one-pronged attack. He has a skill set in being able to exploit all of those character differences that you just talked about. So he doesn't approach each person the same way. And I think that's so cool.
That's actually a really interesting point, because I think in some ways,
even how he rises to the challenge of Karen later on in this chunk of episodes, right? He has to play that differently and does.
Man, that which was one of my favorite moments out of this entire set. But I think that that's a really good point. I so often think of this as this kind of symmetrical, like, journey of Daredevil and Fisk. And I picture it as kind of like this head-to-head battle of wills. But in some ways, I think the way to, maybe the more accurate way to picture this season as a whole is it's like you have, which is a Frank Miller image, like Wilson Fisk as this kind of great spider at the like heart of this web.
Right.
And then you can kind of follow him to everyone else and see like the way that like he's the commonality, and he's the one that's like orchestrating all of it to some degree. And so I think that it's like that's an interesting way of getting to know each of these characters. And I think that that's maybe why the season rises to a level that the others don't, because they so readily utilize that, like having our different characters bump into Fisk, like letting them all have these like really tense interactions. And it almost becomes like a rite of passage for each of these characters. Like, how is your Fisk showdown going to go? And generally, even whenever you're like, oh man, like they're really giving it to him, by the end, he's figured out a way to actually win, to manipulate them in some way that like either they didn't see coming or we didn't even see coming.
Yep. Didn't this chunk of episodes continue the trend that we talked about last time of, at no fault of their own, you do start losing sense of how Foggy and Karen need to be involved here? Ever since you told me that, I can't stop thinking of it, which is like, there's not many places for those characters to go anymore. And so I'm watching this chunk of episodes and I'm thinking, I think that Karen and Foggy as actors are much improved, but I just don't know that their scenes are as necessary as they used to be, basically.
Yeah. No, I think one strange thing that happens in comics, characters that used to be supporting cast members, especially like Silver Age, like 60s era comics, there was a point at which writers, in trying to kind of mine the mythologies around these characters, like as they got more into like modern storytelling, wanted to make them more fully realized and like dig in and make them like more dimensional. So it's like with someone like Foggy or Karen, who were like, they had storylines obviously, but their primary role in those early comics was just, they were there for Matt to bounce things off of, essentially. Like, it was a way for like the plot to kind of move forward for Daredevil. And these are like Daredevil's supporting cast members. And I think then down the line, it was like, well, no, like, let's actually give these characters like full voices,
right?
And let them, which I think is the right, it's the right decision to a point.
Right.
I've noticed that, like, and we can talk about this even at some point whenever we come back and finish talking about the Spider-Man 2 game, because I had a thought about that there as well. But it's like sometimes, okay, I appreciate that. Like, I appreciate now that Foggy is out, like, having a kind of successful run at, or for DA, or at least successful as an attorney apart from Matt. And Karen is like this like really successful journalist apart from Matt. And I think that like as story beats, those are great.
Yeah.
But then at some point it's like, but why are we still following those characters?
Right. Like, that sounds so harsh, but I know what you're saying. And we're trying to like pad that. Like we were trying to say everything to pad that comment. It's also weird because I actually think they're doing a better job. Like most of those decisions are good. Like, for example, I really like Marcy and Foggy's relationship with her. Like, I feel like that really works. And that does add to the character. And I do think it's good to see Foggy outside of the Nelson and Murdoch realm. Cause I feel like he has grown as a character. But then there are also things where it's like, I was trying to process nothing about the sequence of Karen calling her father in, I think it's episode 7. Nothing about that sequence is bad. Like it was actually executed really well, but it did make me wonder, like in this particular story, she's acting well, it's written well. Was that really necessary? Like, does that add to this overall season to find out that Karen also has like a brutal at-home situation?
Right. No, I think
I'm not being funny. I'm just kind of wondering.
No. I think that that's well put. Like, because I want to be clear. Like, I have not had moments in this season of thinking like, oh man, like I wish we didn't have this, or like this feels like shoehorned in. Like, I actually do think that because of what we were just saying, like Fisk being at the center and then that allowing things that even aren't that connected to feel connected, like because Fisk is trying to kill Karen, because Fisk is like trying to take out Foggy's family, like it is all linked in and it's showing the way that Fisk, like, which I think is important because it's showing the way that he's not just impacting like law enforcement and like Matt, because Matt wants to like fight crime and Fisk is crime. It's showing how he's impacting like everyday lives of anybody that he sees is getting in his way.
Right.
So I think it's really well done. I just think in general, especially as we're kind of talking about Daredevil Born Again and whether or not they show up there, it's like, yeah, I think that like that's one of the strange challenges that some of these comic book properties face is like, do you want to let a character actually kind of grow out from under the shadow of the protagonist, or do you want to like keep them in that same role but know that it's always going to be like static? Like, it's like you can either let them evolve, but then they're not really going to have a place in the show or in the film series as much, or you cannot, and then they're there, but everyone's kind of bored of them. And so I think that, like, it's hard to figure out the... I mean, obviously, if you can thread that line perfectly and make them relevant, like, I think, like, Ned and MJ, you know, are great versions of that working.
A quick behind the curtain for a second for our audience. At this point, our audience knows us pretty well. You know, this podcast isn't scripted, and a lot of times Robbie and I come into that episode with some notes, but sometimes I say something and then I think to myself, I don't know if that's the direction I wanted to steer this conversation. And that's how I'm feeling right now, because I love Daredevil season 3 so much that by me bringing up that Foggy and Karen feel a little bit peripheral here, that gives the listener an impression that I have a problem with this season or I don't really like it. And I regret that. I wish I could roll that back because I enjoy this season so much. I don't want that to be the lasting takeaway of this discussion. So I do apologize for that. Yeah. I think what I said is true. I'm not saying I'm wrong, but that is not my lasting impression of these episodes. Does that make sense? Like I brought up a point there that we spent 5 minutes on. That's 1% of the total pie, basically.
Yeah.
So anyways, I kind of wish I could roll that back, but I'm not going to.
I think it's fair to bring up though, in that part of this watch through is in preparation for Daredevil coming over into the MCU and some discussions around what that should or shouldn't look like. So I think that, yeah, I mean, I agree. Like I said, I have not really had any moments in this season of thinking like see, this is why. But I just think, like, yeah, you know, it is like you're getting less and less scenes with like these characters and Matt Murdock. And, right. you know, what does that say?
But, well, you yeah. know how sometimes we go into an episode where it's like, I know I have virtually nothing negative to say, or like I have a couple of major critiques that I want people to hear. Like, I just don't want people to hear that I think Foggy and Karen are a huge downfall of the show. That's all. That's not at all what I was meaning to say there.
On the flip side, I mean, I'm with you. I not only think that the performances are better, I think that they're better written. Like, I like Marcy much better here than in the prior seasons.
Yep.
And Karen, I think, like, is just a better, like, she's a more well-rounded character. And I think that, like, on the kind of Foggy Karen side of it, what's really interesting about ending on this episode for people that are kind of watching along with us to some degree, you know, this season, all the Netflix stuff would kind of drop all at one time. But if this were week to week, you would end this episode as to Karen thinking that she may or may not get murdered by Bullseye in the next episode. Because that's a really, like, this really famous, really controversial scene in Daredevil comics from Kevin Smith and Joe Quesada in the 90s, where Bullseye throws Daredevil's baton, like, through Karen's chest.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah, it's very, like, I think it was controversial at the time for obvious reasons. It's kind of grown even more controversial in the years since as more and more people identify this trope where, like, male heroes will be fueled on by the tragic deaths of, like, their wives or girlfriends, and how it's like these characters will often feel like just vehicles, like the women in these comics will be vehicles for the men to like move forward in this kind of like vengeful fury. So you knowing what happens in Daredevil season 3, which we'll talk about next episode, that creates kind of an interesting discussion about how some of that stuff is dealt with there. But it is a really like it's a nice tease there at the end. Mm-hmm. To be like, yeah, well, maybe this is, you know, if you do feel like Karen, her days are numbered or should be numbered, then, you know, maybe they are.
I love that you brought this back to Poindexter for a second, just because that twist, for someone who knows nothing of any of those comics, the first time I watched this, I wrote, holy crap, the twist of Dax getting the Daredevil suit. That's what I mean by just absolute hopelessness, right? Fisk has got the FBI looking after Matt Murdock as a lawyer. Meanwhile, he's got Dex in the Daredevil suit now doing murders, framing Matt for all this stuff. And so that fight sequence is a little wild for sure, but also just the hopelessness of, oh no, like this entire season of Daredevil, I'm not sure Matt's ever even in the Daredevil suit, right? And then ironically, it's Dex in the suit doing awful things and blaming Matt for it. Kind of with an escalation all the way up to that bulletin attack and the way that Karen's boss freaks out on Karen about, if you know something, you have to tell me. That's when you're kind of just like, oh my gosh, like everyone is so screwed, right? Like you can't tell him why you know Karen, but I understand why you feel so bad. And obviously the entire thing is tragic, especially when they just had Fisk pinned, they thought, you know, with that guy, I'm blanking on his name, that they're going to have talk. And then he gets killed.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Again, it's just masterful writing. And I didn't see that twist coming the first time. Now, you probably knew comics, so you knew that could happen. I didn't.
You know, I mean, I don't think that I was expecting that in particular, like, because even in the comics that happens in a very different, like the scene I'm talking about happens in a different way. You know, you've got a lot of famous stories of villains impersonating heroes and kind of taking advantage of the masked part of all that
to
kind of easily sully their names, and a lot of Spider-Man and Daredevil comics there. But I think this is just done so well, and it's like, I don't think I ever considered how well suited, like in a grounded series like this, how well suited someone with Bullseye's skill set would be to impersonate Daredevil. Like, he really can make a pretty convincing Daredevil in such a way where it's like, okay, well, that's not just anybody putting on the suit. Like, you would normally be able to tell, like, hey, Daredevil's like, he can do all kinds of crazy stuff, and this is just like a normal guy that's wearing a Daredevil costume. But like Bullseye, right. He's like not the hand-to-hand fighter, obviously, but like in the same way that Daredevil can use his like echolocation to bounce things off and like all of his kind of crazy stuff with his sticks, like obviously Bullseye can do that. And it's like there are several things like that in this show where it just, it's done so well and so like it's so masterful that it almost feels backed into sometimes, where it's like they just happen to like land on an arrangement that works to like adapt all these things really perfectly, but also leave you guessing whether you've read the comics or not, but also like show these like really interesting dichotomies and contrasts. And it's like, that is like the like, I think on one of our episodes recently, I was talking about like writing that felt a little like heavy-handed at times, where it's just like a little too on the nose, or it's like they needed like one layer more of like subtlety. And this is like what I'm thinking of when I make those comments, where it's like, this is just such a cohesive season so far, and like nothing ever feels forced, nothing ever feels like overly convenient to me, right. Plot wise, it's just like, man, this is like the way that all these pieces fit together is really impressive.
Jasper Evans, by the way, that was his name.
Oh, nice.
Honestly, the last big thing for me is we got to talk a little bit about the reveal of Matt's mother. Because that's a huge thing here. I have in my notes originally watching this show, in all caps, the nun is his mother. I don't have a hot take on this. How did you remember feeling when you found that out?
So I'm trying to remember if I think that by the time I saw the third season, I had read enough Daredevil comics to know that she was his mother. But I still think that I was surprised, just because, you know, you never know what is and isn't going to be adapted. And so that's something that they could have just kind of taken as like a spiritual thing, but not made her like his actual biological mother. But the way that he finds out here is like I love that it's not like a, like I love that she doesn't tell him. I mean, it makes it so brutal, because it's like, man, if she had just even earlier in the season told him. Yes. Yeah. It makes it so much worse.
Yeah, that's true.
And the last episode is really just Matt like wrestling with that in a way that again feels so perfectly paced to me. Like sometimes I get exhausted by like, here's a big like bombshell, and then here's, you know, an episode or two of somebody having to just like be like troubled by that. And here it's like this perfect thing where Matt is gearing up to go like take the fight to Kingpin. And this is the thing that's driving him now. Like now it's like, it's weirdly not even about Fisk anymore. Like now he's going after Fisk and saying he's going to kill him. And it feels like it's because he's mad at his mom. Like,
right.
And I love that.
Right. Right. How about the crazy parallel between Matt early on in the season questioning his faith in God and God's plan for him, and the people that are standing up for God's plan and helping and being God to Matt are the priest and this nun. And then as Matt kind of slowly learns to trust them, the perfect writing to give the heartbreak there of, even though they did all those things and that's good and it's true, they still didn't tell Matt the biggest secret of all, which is that the nun right. that's helping you is your mother. So right when you feel like Matt can finally trust in that side of it, now that is taken from him. Now he doesn't right. even know if he knows this nun. Like, how could you not say, I'm your mother this entire time? And she's been so perfect in helping him get back to where he was this whole time. And except this giant detail of like, oh, and by the way, I was the mother that abandoned you and still hasn't told you. Just brutal. That's what I mean by like the most hopeless spot possible with this stuff.
And what I, but what I love about it too is like, and I like that this is not, again, something that has to be hammered in, but in this final episode, he's having these imaginary conversations with his dad and with Fisk again and processing all of this. And there's a lot going on about like, how much is he like his dad? Is he just like another kind of, he's going to keep fighting and he's going to go down fighting and he's got these like violent tendencies. Like, is it just that, or is there something more? And I think that what I find really intriguing at this point in the season is the something more now you're seeing is his mom. Like, and then you start to kind of look at, like, Matt's been so defined through the entire series as like the son of his father who was killed. And it's like that background, the growing up around like the boxing gym, like it all, that informs him so much. But I love this idea that really, like, a lot of what makes Matt is his mom. And we've seen that like all season and just didn't even like it didn't even register unless you were looking for it. But it's like the fact that she's always able to kind of go toe to toe with him in these arguments, and that like she thinks about things on a level that he does. Like, she's like him in that she's like realistic but also idealistic, and is trying to do the right thing but also like is not someone that will ignore like the realities of the things in front of her. So it's like, I think that I love the revelation and how it just kind of deepens our understanding of this character that I think was already really like one of the more nuanced ones that we have in Marvel.
And how about the final shot of this chunk? That Matt is so ticked off at all of this that he decides he's finally going to break his rule. He goes to Fisk's house to kill him. Finds out
right.
that he has a secret trapdoor, which is mind-blowing. That's how he's been doing all this. Meets that secretary down there who's basically like, please kill him. I want to get out of this. And Matt has fully made up his mind, okay, I'm going to stay here. Fisk is going to come home and I'm going to kill him. And then that'll just put the end to all this, which I kind of get a little bit. You know, sometimes you're watching this stuff and it's that Spider-Man, Captain America, Daredevil thing where it's like, man, if you'd break your one rule, or Batman, you know, break that one rule this one time, you could actually avoid a ton of pain for a lot of people, not just you. A lot of people's life, like in Matt being unwilling to kill Fisk, how many more people are going to die, right? Like, think about Nadim and his whole family, and think about like all this stuff that gets caused because Matt won't break that rule. So it's just crazy to me that he finally makes up his mind to break that rule, to stay in the house. And right when he's going to, finds out that Karen's actually in trouble and Karen's going to die. And so now you're immediately back to the same square one thought of, okay, you can stay here and just end this by killing Fisk, or do you bail on this entire thing and go help Karen again?
Like, that's what makes it so compelling. Yeah, I mean, and with you're right. Like, it's a Daredevil Batman thing especially, like even more than Spider-Man for me, because Spider-Man, it feels like that is so far from who that character is.
Right.
Like, unless we're talking about like black suit or something.
Like Spider-Man, yeah, he feels like he's never on the offensive, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Whereas Batman and Daredevil, because they have the vengeance side of it, that line gets blurred sometimes. Where it's like, dude, if you just killed this guy, you know, you might prevent some future troubles. But yeah, Spider-Man's never even in that spot, really. Other than like the Green Goblin thing and No Way Home, etc. But yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think like, because you're right. Like Batman, Daredevil, it's almost like they are, like they're waging a war on crime in the city, which is a very different mentality than
Spider-Man. Versus trying to save people. Yes.
Right. Like, and so, yeah, I think it is like, it's really hard to think, like, just think about the people that would still be alive even at this point if Matt had just, whenever he had Fisk cornered in the alley at the end of season one, killed him.
You could have put an end to it.
Yeah.
But no, again, I mean, like, I understand not wanting to kill people, but, you know, yeah. Again, that's the metaphysical conversation that has to happen that I love. It's playing with that moral gray area. I love you saying the wage the war on crime because that's exactly the difference. The human nature, you can't help but think about it, like Matt.
No, I mean, and by the way, this is why, and this is another reason why I enjoyed this season so much. I think one of the things that makes Daredevil such a unique character in the realm of superhero stuff, but really in fiction in some ways, is like the Catholicism piece being so influential. Like, because I was reading, Chip Zdarsky just finished this kind of acclaimed run on the character, and Chip is not, as far as I know, like in any way a religious guy, but he talked about how that was his favorite part of writing Daredevil, was exploring the part of him that is an actual believing Catholic and that also puts on a costume and beats people up, but then also puts on a suit the next day and goes into court and represents people like them. And it's like, you've got just such this weird mixture of motives that, like, if you told me that that was a character that you had just created like from scratch, I would say like that is like, there's so much going on there that I think it's too ridiculous for anyone to ever buy into. But for some reason it works with Daredevil, which, by the way, throwing on top of all of that, that he's like blind and has like all of these crazy extra senses. Like, there's just a lot going on with this person, but it like creates these tensions that I don't think you feel even with a character like Batman, who like is similar in so many ways, but doesn't have like Batman is like his time, not as Batman, like as Bruce Wayne, is just kind of a disguise for like to throw people off the trail. But like for Daredevil, like he does have a life as Matt that in some ways is at odds with his life as Daredevil. And so it's like in the middle of all that, this question of like, should I break the law as a lawyer, like, and kill Fisk, but also should I break like the moral law as a Catholic and kill Fisk?
Correct. That's such a good point too. The Bruce Wayne part of the character is often the left out, more forgotten, disguised part. And really Bruce Wayne, because he's so rich and popular, can really just kind of do whatever he wants, right? There's no real moral gray area with Bruce.
Right.
There is with Batman, but you're so right. Who Matt is trying to be as a person in his faith, in his relationships with Foggy and Karen, and as a lawyer, are all at odds with his other ego.
Which I think is why we've had to see him basically kill those other parts of himself in this season. Like, basically, like he leaves his cross on the lamp in his room at the church as kind of this, like, you know, I'm done with God. And then he's cut out Foggy and Karen and taken advantage of them. And like showing, and even whenever he talks to them like Daredevil, not like Matt. And it's like, he's like to let that part like really succeed, he has to kind of kill the other two pieces of himself. But then it's like, that then gets you into the conversation of like, if he did go down this road and if he did kill those other pieces of himself, at what point does he then become a villain?
Yeah, lose those parts of him. Yeah. Which are his moral compass.
Right.
No, I love it. That's all I had, but I love it.
Yeah. I think that kind of, I mean, I think we talked about Fisk through the lens of all these other characters.
Oh yeah. And like I said, go check out our initial reactions to the Echo trailer, that episode, so we can talk about it more there. If you've never seen Daredevil season 3 and you're actually watching along with us and you have actually paused at episode 9, I'm guessing that's almost nobody out there. But if that was the case, buckle up for these last four. We're going to be covering episode 10 through 13 soon here on Friends from Work Plus, and it's a wild ending. I think the finale for me would be up there with like Loki finale as far as best finales in this Marvel space. I love how this ends so much. I think, as you said, it gets a little bit darker before a little bit lighter, but yeah, just be on the lookout for some of these big themes we're talking about. Cause I think when you're looking for them, you can see how special the show really is.
One thing that I love is I actually don't remember exactly how it ends. Like, I have a vague recollection, but I'm really excited to get there because I think this is just my second time watching this entire season, which is kind of crazy for a person like me.
Ever. But, wow. Yeah.
Like, I think you maybe have now seen it more than me.
This is my third watch right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. I'm really looking forward to that. The final note here for me, we are, depending on when this episode comes out, we are or will soon be talking with the composer of Daredevil, John Pezzano.
Good point.
Who is also the composer of the Spider-Man 2 game, which is probably what we'll be.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man 1, right. But we'll be talking more about his work there. But it's funny to me, like, just because of that connective tissue, I think about these as similar properties for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a testament to how much he kind of adds to the vibe of the projects that he scores. But I think that, like, because of that, one, I really, like, there's really no new ground to break here as to Daredevil, other than I just think season 3 is the perfection of his Daredevil score. Like I said, I really loved what he did with Defenders there, but then I feel like he like brought some like nice lessons of kind of expanding the scope a bit that he learned with season 2 and season and the Defenders, but then like really like homed in on this like the stuff from season 1 that was great and then just kind of expanding. But more importantly for me, I love it when people can adapt things this like deftly, where it just feels so like you get these little shout out moments for fans, but it never feels intense, like it too intensely like over your head. And so this is like the smallest thing, but I like wrote it down on my notes and I knew I was going to be mad if I didn't bring it up. Like, an example of this is the Born Again comic that so much of this season is based on has this kind of famous fight with this Daredevil villain, the Gladiator, who is like, that's not the first appearance of the villain, but it's like a villain that was reformed and then is like back on the street, but acting crazy. And Daredevil's trying to figure out what's going on with him. And the Gladiator is Melvin Potter.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And
I remember you said that.
Yeah. And he's got the like spinning, like, the like spinning wheels, like what are those even? gear looking things. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, 100% no. I don't know what they're called though, unfortunately.
There's got to be a word for that. Like buzzsaw maybe. I don't know. Anyway, but I love that like this is the, like, we've talked about kind of the high level adaptation of the character that this does so well. But then like just before we ended, I wanted to shout out like the fight that we get here between Melvin and Daredevil, and how it's like kind of another chance to see, like you were saying, like the way that Fisk like gets his fingers into every, like everyone's lives. And
yeah,
like that's tragic. It's tragic that Daredevil's having to fight him. It's tragic that Daredevil kind of broke a promise to him that he would like always keep he and Betsy safe from Fisk. And now he can't. And then like for it to like, on top of all of that, you just get the like little quick like appearance of these like ridiculous weapons that the character uses in the comics, but in a way that's like fitting because he's, you know, in his like weird armor tailor shop. It was just like a little microcosm of this series that made me feel like so many things in the Spider-Man 2 game have made me feel, where I'm like, man, I see what you're doing and there are so many layers to this and it looks so effortless and is so gripping that like it doesn't pull you out of it. And it's just, that's why I feel like this is top tier comic book storytelling. And we're not even to the grand finale yet.
100%. Thank you everyone out there for listening and for subscribing to Friends From Work Plus. It really helps out Robbie and I and the whole Friends From Work team. Be on the lookout for Daredevil Part 3 coming soon as we kind of wrap up this epic Netflix Daredevil saga, hopefully just in time for some news on the Daredevil Born Again front as we bring Matt Murdock, Wilson Fisk, and others from this show over into the MCU, starting with Echo really soon. We'll be talking to you very shortly. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time here on Friends From Work Plus.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.